the true strategic outcomes in life are local. Understanding local context and understanding that the people that execute locally are where the rubber meets the road. That's where it really gets done. And if there isn't strong trust and strong social capital between the leadership and the people that are executing locally, then that disparity is going to cost you money and it's going to cost you relationships and could cost you a lot more in terms of liability.
This is To The Point, a Rhino Experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, To The Point listeners, it's your boy Chris. We are excited for this episode. This is going to be a great one. But what's new before we get started with it is I've got my co-host, Mr. Chad Peterman, on the other end. Chad, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great. Excited that this is the first one that we're going to officially kick off together. I think you and I both met our guest at the same time, and impressive. Just really excited to talk to him and really hope we can help a lot of people with some of his advice. I know it took a lot from his initial talk that you and I both heard.
Yeah, man, we were just talking about it a couple weekends ago because we were, together out here in Phoenix. And so we're both excited about it. That's what I was telling Scott, too, pre-podcast was it was, you know, it's cool that it kind of worked itself out since we all got to meet down on Cabo at the Smart AC retreat. And, I, at that point in time, I didn't even know who he was. I'd never heard of him. And so when Josh Kelly, who brought him down, was telling me, I was like, he was all excited for us to hear him. I was like, okay. And then I was like, okay, now I get it. Like, and then since then, some of the things that he shared with us at that retreat on some leadership and some different techniques and things I've used. I've even had to text him afterwards and say, hey, what was it I was supposed to say again when I did this breathing exercise? So I've used it. But let me go ahead and do a quick introduction to our listeners, because this is going to be a really exciting episode for you. And if you love hearing stories and kind of hear, like, this is a great one about stories that also ties back into good leadership, all kinds of stuff, mental fortitude exercises, things like that. This will be applicable to everybody in some way. But we have retired United States Army Green Beret, Mr. Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, in the house today, which, by the way, Scott, it says retired. Are you ever like really retired? Because it seems like you're doing a ton of stuff right now as it is.
Yeah, my wife and I were just talking about that on the way in today. Like, when does this retirement thing actually happen? Like, when does the title actually mean that? And I think I'm busier right now than when I was on active duty.
Yeah,
but it's good to be with you guys.
It seems that way. It seems that way. So I'm like, I think retired is a term you need to use loosely, because it doesn't really appear like you're retired. I don't know if that actually ever happens, or like to an entrepreneur either. Like, we still kind of do things, but you're off doing a lot. And what I want our listeners to know is just to share a few of those things that you've done and that you're currently doing, because you have a number one international best-selling book. Is that correct? Is that the Operation Pineapple Express? Is that correct?
Well, actually, Pineapple was a New York Times bestseller.
New York Times bestseller.
Yeah.
So you've been writing some books. You wrote, was it Game Changers? Mm-hmm. You have Going Local to Defeat Extremists. You have children's books. You have children's books that I saw on there, which was really cool. Yeah. But you got a new book that's on pre-sale right now that's coming out, which is Nobody is Coming to Save You, right? It's still on pre-sale, right? That's not actually out, right? So we're still on pre-sale.
It still is. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, still on pre-sale.
You did 3 TEDx. You know, I've always wanted to do one. I've applied to do them. I've never been chosen, but you've done 3. That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
You were on Fox News, CNN, NBC. You've kind of done all these things and telling some of the story of your history. And so I'm excited. You know, we only got to hear a small little portion of the story and some of the trainings that you do in our Cabo retreat where Chad and I met you. And then from dinner, thankfully we got to eat, have dinner with you and ask you and questions with you and Monty, your wife. And man, I love to spend time like that. It was such a, very, anytime I can learn anything new, it was good. And this is something that hit home with me. So today you have what, the Rooftop Podcast, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You do plenty of leadership training. You're doing keynotes. I heard you did a keynote at Service World Expo. Is that correct?
I've done three.
Okay.
I think with service station with, yeah, I think it's three.
Wow. Okay.
I've spent a lot of time with him. Yeah. And that's actually how I met Josh.
That's what he told me. So I didn't see
Josh
that.
Kelly.
Yeah. That's, I didn't know that. I didn't see it. And so I was like, he told me like, yeah, cause I asked him, I said, how did you guys meet? And so he had told me that. So if any of you are listening, yeah. I'm sure plenty of you are that were there, you probably already know who Scott is. So, but the thing that you're doing right now that we were just talking about this weekend, I just started watching it on Amazon Prime, was your play, man, Last Out, the Elegy of a Green Beret.
Yeah.
It's been out there. I just happened to watch it on, what was it, a couple of days ago when I was messaging you, it's pretty cool, man, that you're doing, like I said, this is why I'm saying you're not retired. You're still doing all the stuff.
No, I haven't. And that's, I appreciate it. It's the play was something I never in my wildest dreams thought I would do. Certainly wouldn't write one. And then to complete the midlife crisis and learn how to act at age 50 was really different. But that's been a great experience. I've learned more about communications and connection as much from being a playwright and an actor as I have been a Green Beret.
Dude, you're pretty good at it too.
Well, thank you. I've got a lot to learn. I have a lot to learn. And I started late, but I have a lot of reps on it. We've done the play a lot of times. We've done the play in 30 cities now, we get better each time. And it's a very emotional play. The show on Amazon Prime is not bad, but the live performances are my favorite.
Yeah, always better when it's live. You know what's interesting, though, why I shouldn't be shocked that you're good at it is because in a lot of ways, it seems like your career and time as a Green Beret actually plays a lot into that too, because you're having to go into these places and build these relationships and act. There's probably, there's a lot of acting that has to happen at some level, right? Cause you have to go in and try and befriend some of the different groups of folks that you're with. It's a whole other thing. And this is when you brought it up to, what is a Green Beret? What I thought a Green Beret, is not what it is. So what I want you to do is let our listeners know, what is a Green Beret? I'll be curious to see if they thought it was something along the lines that I did too. I mean, yes, he's an official badass. That is 100% true. But what is a Green Beret?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question. And it's awesome to be on with you and Chad. It seems like it was just the other day we were hanging out. Right. But it's a lot of people get it wrong because the films and the books get it wrong. There is a certain Hollywood dynamic in all of the portrayal of elite forces, whether it's SEALs or Rangers or Delta or Green Berets. There's this, kind of this Hollywood factor that goes into all of it. And so people, if you think about it, that makes sense that that's where people get their perception of what it is. And they all kind of get lumped together. But in truth, Green Berets are very, very different than other elite operators. And my first exposure to a Green Beret was actually in the little town I grew up in Mount Ida, Arkansas. And a Green Beret walked into our soda shop when I was 14. He was on leave. His name was Mark. And I was just fascinated with this dude because he was like 28 years old, but yet you could tell there was something about the way he walked in. When I sat down with him and I was like a scrawny runt, man. I had never even really left this town much. And so it was kind of like the sheriff walking into a saloon, in an old West movie. He explained to me what Green Berets were and what they did. And what he told me was that they, Green Berets are very, very different than Navy SEALs and Delta troopers who typically will go on a target and they will take the target down surgically, but usually they do the mission themselves. They're in and out really quick, violence of action. And they're the best in the world at doing that, taking out terrorists like Osama bin Laden, like SEAL Team did. Whereas Green Berets, they do some of that work, but the real specialty of a Green Beret, Mark explained to me, was how they work by, with, and through indigenous people, and they help those people stand up on their own. Typically, where you'll see Green Berets working are places like Ukraine or Afghanistan, where you're trying to help the people of a country stand up against oppression or stand up against forces that are counter to the United States policies from the inside out, right? So everything that you do is relationship based. And the way I tell people is you kind of ride in with 12 and you come out with 1200. And that's the general idea, is that they're a force multiplier. They use relationships to build social capital. And then once that's established, then you recruit, train, and equip those individuals, and you fight alongside them to do subversion, sabotage, whatever needs to be done from the inside out to disrupt the enemy.
By now, you've probably heard how much of a proponent I am for BlueOn, but I'm not the only one. When you talk to service managers using BlueOn, the stories all sound very familiar. Nick Christensen over at Herbal Heating says his team saved 46 hours in just the first month. Between the parts lookup, wiring diagrams, and AI troubleshooting, his techs are solving issues faster and ordering the right part the first time. It's even streamlined communications between the techs and the parts department. They just screenshot over the right part from BlueOn and send it over. It's simple, it's accurate, and it works. And yeah, Peterman Brothers is definitely seeing that impact too. Do yourself a favor, click the link in the description and book a quick demo to see it in action.
Yeah. Scott, if you don't mind, I wanted to touch on that because this is something that we're going through in our business right now. And it's really kind of management and leadership training. And when you say work by, with, and through, to me, that's what we're trying to convey down to our branch managers, to our service line managers, that it is the people that are actually out there doing the work that we have to work by, with, and through. What was one of the, or what are maybe a few key things that listeners could take away to say, hey, when we are trying to build relationships and trying to create that trust with our teams, this is something that we did when you went into a foreign land or a foreign, you know, people that spoke different languages. What are some of those key things that people could take away and say, ooh, I could really implement this when it comes to building trust with my team?
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that question. And I think it's really, I agree with you. First of all, I've worked around the industry that y'all are in a good bit and got to know, you know, a lot of the different operators and business owners and practitioners that are out there, you know, taking care of people in their homes. And I think you're right. I first of all, well, here's what I would say is this is so what I'm about to tell you comes from a place where the other thing that Green Berets do and that I've spent almost 30 years doing is studying human nature and what I call the human operating system. And so while my experience may have been at least for 20 years in the domain of low trust conflict, right? We don't have the market cornered on low trust and conflict, and humans are essentially the same in how we're wired to navigate the world. We are social creatures. We're meaning seeking creatures. We're emotional creatures. We're storytellers. We are rooted in struggle. And so the dynamics of leadership are really the same. And while the stakes may be different, the dynamics are the same. So a couple of things that I would say, particularly in y'all's industry, is one, everything in life that really matters is local. I mean, if you really want to get down to it, the true effectiveness, the true strategic outcomes in life are local. Understanding local context and understanding that the people that execute locally are where the rubber meets the road. That's where it really gets done. And if there isn't strong trust and strong social capital between the leadership and the people that are executing locally, then that disparity is going to cost you money, and it's going to cost you relationships and could cost you a lot more in terms of liability. It's building that social capital, those tangible and intangible linkages down to the lowest level of execution at the street level that is absolutely essential. And honestly, in the times that we live in today, Chad, there is such a degree of stress that is pressing on the market and such a degree of stress that's pressing on civil society. And if you think about like what y'all's operators are under, the stress levels they're under on a daily basis, is if you don't have strong social capital, a strong relationship portfolio with local applications, when you hit a crisis, it's going to be a house of cards. You know, it's going to be a house of cards. And so the other thing that I would say that's really important for leaders nowadays is to build trust when risk is low and leverage it when risk is high, right? Because if that's just that's a human dynamic. If you try to leverage trust all the time and you're not building that trust when risk is lower, then eventually just if you're going to, you know, leadership is the management of energy, yours and those around you. And eventually that energy is going to deplete and you're not going to have anything in the tank. So like social capital is indeed capital. It is capital. It's the oldest form of capital in the world. And Green Berets understand that. So if I go into an area where, for example, if I'm going to work with village elders in Afghanistan and that area has been depleted of social capital, we've bombed the hell out of it. We've treated the people there like shit. We don't have good rapport. Then my first order of business is I've got to build social capital when risk is low to get it to a certain threshold where I can even ask them to do things that would require them to stick their jugular out a little bit. And I think that's where we're kind of missing the boat nowadays in leadership is we keep asking and asking and asking and asking and asking of our kids, of the people that do our bidding out there at the tactical level. But where are we putting the gas back in the tank? Where are we building the capital back up when risk is low? And that's, to me, the most important thing that we should be doing as leaders. And probably 90% of it is not money. It's those human dynamics of social capital that can be restored and replenished if we're intentional about it.
Yeah, that kind of plays into the, you know, people will leave leaders, not companies or not businesses type of thought process.
100%. I think that's true. I mean, I really do. I mean, honestly, obviously financial capital is a factor, but it's my experience in leadership has been like I've seen men and women do things above and beyond the call of duty that were Herculean in nature and money didn't have a damn thing to do with it.
Hey, now I want to take our listeners through this. I mean, that was a really great way to kick this thing off, Chad. That's applicable to pretty much everybody listening. I think it's important to let the listeners know, and we don't need to go like deep into it, but I mean, you've done, and I'm guessing off the top of my head from what I remember from clear back in Cabo, but you've done, is it 17 tours? Am I close?
So 17 times I left home during the war. God. To go to places abroad. I did 3 long tours in Afghanistan, a short trip over to Iraq, and I did a lot of what we called short tours in Afghanistan that were anywhere from 45 to 90 days. The other 3 were just under a year. So a lot of time downrange, not as much time as a lot of other guys that have done double, triple that. You know, it was the longest war in our nation's history, but enough time that I missed, you know, probably half my kids' lives and you know, anniversaries and birthday, enough to know you missed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Well, okay. At least I got 17 in there somewhere.
Yeah, no, you got it right. I said goodbye. What I say is I said goodbye to my wife, Monty, and our little boy 17 times in 10 years. Right.
Got it. So you got to kind of be over and in it. And you told us this really great story about Nizam. Did I get it right?
Nizam. Yeah.
Nizam.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And which was a fantastic story that I'd love for our listeners to hear at some point. That's a longer story, so you might have to be a follow up on it. But it's the book too, right?
Operation Pineapple Express. The half the book is us getting Nizam out of Afghanistan when the country collapsed in 2021, and the other half is the 1,000 dudes that followed him.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, Housecall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game. Yeah, and it's a fantastic story, by the way. Like, I was sucked into the whole thing. It's just so interesting. Thanks. You know, but you know, we talked about leading, being a leader in chaos or leading through chaos and things like that. Well, I mean,
yeah, kind of being over, chaos.
Being over there is leading through chaos. And, you know, and though it's not the same, you know, as, you know, me leading a business or whatever, there's chaos. It's just not the apples to apples chaos. We're not talking life and death situations. Sure. It could be a life and death situation. I use air quotes for customer service, for sales, but you have to lead through chaos no matter what. And sometimes that means leading yourself through whatever you consider the chaos to be. But what have you taken away from that experience? I mean, that's a lot of time to still spend over there, a lot of things to see. A lot of folks come back and can't fall back into a normal routine, a regular routine. You said goodbye to, you know, Monty and your boys 17 times to go over there, and you come back, yet you're still able to come back, function, and then go and lead other people. That can't be easy to compartmentalize that. Maybe you didn't. Maybe you just found another outlet, and this is your outlet for it. But how did you take all that time over there in that chaos, leading different men, leading people you've never met to try and get them to, you know, to get the social capital for them to, you know, become an ally of yours over there? Like, how do you take all that, come back here, and then apply that to, you know, like to your day-to-day life now, like going and leading people? Like, how can you take that information and give that to like somebody like me and Chad who leads people and say, okay, here's what I've learned and here's what you need to do? Was there some like formula, some process? Like, how does that work for a contractor who's saying, well, I didn't fight anywhere like that, but it's, you know, how do you take that experience and plug it into this and having the success with the leadership training that you have been?
Yeah, I think what I'll start with is, you know, going over to, you know, I made a decision to be a Green Beret and go to these places. And so by definition, these places were chaotic, right? So they were low trust, high stakes, high risk. And when you would go into these places, the people there were very distracted. They had been so much change and you know, turnover from NATO forces. They were disengaged. They didn't have any purpose in themselves or each other because of 40 years of war. And they were disconnected. They didn't trust their neighbor. They didn't trust their government. They didn't trust us. So it was kind of this thing I call the churn. It was this churn of just these social conditions that by design, that's where you're going, right? So you get dropped in there, and then your job is from the inside out. The first thing you've got to do is you've got to build rapport. You've got to navigate that churn. You've got to kind of cut through the distraction. You got to get people ready to listen. You've got to overcome that lack of purpose and help them find some purpose. And then you've got to find a way to connect like your life depends on it, because they're so disconnected that if you can't build relationships and rapport with these individuals in fairly short order, you're probably going to get killed, or you're at least going to fail in your ability to mobilize these people to do something bigger. And so those were the realities going into that churn, right? And I loved it. I thrived in it. I found multiple deployments over and over again. And what you get pretty good at over time, you get pretty good at leading yourself, you get pretty good at leading your team, and you get pretty good at these human connections. You start to realize that there is both art and science to the way that you connect with people in low trust situations. What I didn't expect was when I came home after 23 years of doing that and I retired, and I'm thinking, okay, now, you know, I've lived this life of high performance. I'm going to write my book. My boys are still at home. My marriage is still intact. I'm going to live the life that I kind of should live now as a civilian. I'm going to go fishing. I'm going to let my hair grow out. Like, this is going to be awesome. And what I did not expect was that within, I don't know, a few days of taking off those desert boots and putting on my Tampa Bay flip-flops, that the snakes in my head would start squirming, and that I would start to experience a lack of purpose, a lack of identity. And I looked around me, Chad and Chris, and I saw a country that I didn't recognize anymore. I saw the same kind of distraction here at home. People were like not even listening to each other at all. There was a complete lack of purpose everywhere you looked, and the levels of distrust, I mean, it was off the charts that how disconnected we were. I think Sebastian Younger in his book Tribe said it best. He said, veterans, when they come home, are more than willing to die for their country, but they have no idea how they're supposed to live for it, because it's hard to know how to live for a country that's tearing itself apart along every imaginable line, from race to socioeconomics to religion. And that's what all of that was like. Oh my God, I've given up my entire life and lost all these friends, 23 friends in combat, and the churn is as bad here or worse than it was in Afghanistan. You know, and that for me just put me in a spiral, man. And within 18 months of retirement, and I did not talk about this in Cabo, it's not like my favorite thing to talk about, but I was standing in a closet holding a pistol, you know, and I was a wreck. I was a complete wreck. I had lost everything that I thought I knew about the world. And, you know, I hadn't shaved in days. I'd showered. And my kids, if I walked in a room, my boys would walk out of the other room. They would walk out of the room because they didn't know what version of dad they were going to get, you know? And so when I walked into that closet that day, had my son not come home from school when he did it, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And so I would love to sit here and tell you that I had it all together and I transitioned perfectly. It was a crap show. It was in that moment when I heard my son come home that I cleared my weapon, put it up, didn't tell anybody for years that had happened. And it was that grace of God that I came across a civilian mentor named Bo, who was a former NFL football player, voted the dirtiest free safety in the NFL. They said when this guy hits you, he'd hit you so hard you smell smoke. And he had become an actor and a storyteller. He saved me. Him and my wife saved my life. They saved my life. My wife picked me up off the floor more times than I can count and kept me going. And Bo kept telling me that I had a story to tell and that there was a way to take all this churn at home and be relevant within it the same way I had over there. And somehow, some way, and you mentioned kind of that body of work in the beginning. I mean, that was just my attempt to stay one step in front of the guilt and the PTS, man, and just to try to find a way to be relevant. And so if I were to bring that back to the people listening to this, is, you know, taking care of people all the time is hard. And I know a lot of your people listening and watching this, that's what they do. They're always taking care of people. And, you know, there's a cost to that, man. There's a transaction to that. And people don't see it. They don't understand, you know, but when you're doing that all the time, it can get dark and it can get hard and it can get really, really troublesome. And I've been down that road, you know, and I came about as close as you can get to, you know, ending my life. And, if I could say anything to your question, cause I know there's all kinds of ways to take that, but that's where that came from for me. So when I talk about human connection and storytelling and, you know, yes, I learned it in the badlands of Afghanistan, but it saved my life here.
And it gave me a new direction and a new purpose
to bridge across gaps when it really matters. And it saved my life, man. And so I am convinced that in the darkest of places and in the roughest ground, it's where our greatest opportunities lie.
Yeah.
And I am grateful every day for that.
Yeah. I mean, you, it sounds like you needed help and you got help. And I think our listeners can completely relate to that. It's just asking for it. Yeah. I didn't know that. Like I don't know. The story was already appealing, so I don't know where that would have fit into your original story in Cabo, but thanks for sharing that with me. I had no idea, but you know, thankfully your son come home. Yeah.
Well, I had lost 9 friends to suicide at that point. And these weren't, you know, these weren't slackers. These were high performing. These were Delta SEALs, you know, guys that had played at the highest level that took their lives. And my point there is that when you're a high performer and you play at a higher level, there's a cost. There is a transaction that must be paid. And it manifests in different ways, right? It manifests in different ways, but you asked how I dealt with that and seeing friends die, and not well in the beginning. I, you know why? Because I tried to carry it all, tried to push it down so I could stay in the game. And it ultimately reared its head in a way that was completely inappropriate for my life, and it nearly killed me. And so I am a huge advocate of talking about this stuff. And my last TED talk was about this. It's called The Generosity of Scars. And the play was actually born from this mental health challenge and my desire to repurpose that struggle of PTS and survivor's guilt into a story that would help civilians understand the cost of war and veterans know that it mattered, right? And my point here is that it doesn't matter what your journey is, what your industry is, the stuff that scuffs us up, the stuff that knocks us down, the stuff that is the hardest stuff in our life is actually the greatest attribute and asset for leadership that we have in our kit bag. And if we can learn how to harness it into narratives and stories, there's no ceiling for what we can do.
Yeah, I think that's so powerful, Scott. After our conversation, I know we talked at dinner and it was all about, you know, me and like, how do I grapple with this, you know, to your point of always having to take care of people. You got to be the leader. You always got to be on when things are good. You know, that's great. But when things are bad, you got to figure that out too. And I think that one of the things that we try to relay to our leaders is that you don't have to have all the answers. It's actually more powerful if you don't and you admit it and you tell your people, hey, I don't really know the answer, but together we're going to figure this out. And I thought that after that talk, that's when I was like, hey, we just need to share our story. And that story can be good. It can be bad. It can be, I don't think anybody cares about this. But at the end of the day, as long as you can connect with somebody, you're going to make an impact. And it's when we press it down and we don't share our story and the things that we're going through that others, you know, think, well, you know, it never happens to him or, you know, he never has a bad day or whatever it is. And it's like, it's okay just to share, hey, things aren't going great. And I may need some help or, hey, things aren't going great and we all need to come together and fix this.
Yeah, that's really good, Chad. And I'll just build on that. And I'm also going to take it back to the original question you asked me about local. You know, about local, you know, just yep. aspects of local, because I think this speaks to that. But two things in that regard that I think are really, really important is, you know, one is just recognizing that, well, like when we would operate in these places that were either behind enemy lines or in really rough places, you know, typically we're walking around with no body armor, a pistol, maybe. And, you know, you've got your beer, you're literally completely either unarmed or very lightly armed and no individual body armor or anything like that. And you're in some of the most dangerous places on earth. Why? Because the relationships are so strong that if something goes down, that elder or that person next to you is not going to be the one attacking you. He's going to be the one moving you to safety. And I just think there's something really powerful in that for the rest of us. I think to understand that I believe the most impactful parents, travel ball coaches, spouses, and bosses and team leaders in the world are the ones who are relatable to people's pain and relevant to their goals. It is the ultimate body armor. It is the ultimate, you know, tool for leadership. If you want to move somebody in hard times, you have to be relatable to their pain and you have to be relevant to their goals. Because we are goal-seeking creatures. Every human on the planet is just trying to meet their goals. That's all they're trying to do, right? And we know that anytime we pursue a goal, there's going to be obstacles in the way of that goal, which lead to pain. So leaders who are dialed in and who understand, look, I got to be relatable to this person's pain, which means I've got to really try to see the pictures in their head and ascertain what those pain points are and at least acknowledge them. In the context of the goals they're trying to achieve, you're going to own every room you walk into because that's what we all need. We need leaders. We crave leaders, parents, teachers, you know, spouses who do that. But we don't do it because the transactional world we live in takes us the other direction. That's number one. So thinking about as a metric for just day-to-day impact, am I relatable right now? Am I relevant right now? If I just ask myself those questions when I'm talking to my teenager that's been bullied online, that's a damn good couple of questions to ask. The other one that I just want to say is a lot of times it's not the stories that we tell. It's the stories that we ask to hear. Thoughtful, open-ended questions, what the author Warren Berger calls questionology. to your point, Chad, we do not have to have all the answers. And in times of complexity and chaos, COVID, we're not going to have the answers. There's no way. It's impossible. But what we can do are ask thoughtful, open-ended questions that let the other party respond in narrative, and that's where the answers live. The answers live in the questions that we ask, right? The questions we ask of our teammates, the questions we ask of our kids, the questions we ask of ourselves in hard times, right? And if we just give that space and hold that space for people to respond in narrative, my experience has been in the most dangerous, diabolical places on earth, the answers are going to come to you from the people that you lead, the people that you love. We just got to be willing to ask questions and know that, hey, man, I don't know the answer, but I'm going to hold space and we're going to get it. And people actually respond to that. People actually feel safe with leaders who do that.
Yeah, I think that being in business and not having business any experience, I had to ask a lot of questions. I was having to learn pretty much the entire way. But yeah. One thing I felt like I was always good at was being, you know, relatable, or at least finding a way to be relatable in whatever the situation was, you know, and be, you know, and be genuine the same time for me. But, you know, I wasn't always relevant. So I had to at least be relatable, and that one will get you pretty far. Listeners, thank you so much again for listening to this podcast week after week. We are extremely grateful. Again, the whole purpose of this podcast is to give back to the home services industry that we love so much, whether you're a Rhino or not. We really, really appreciate all the subscribers. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please go in and subscribe, and you'll get all the episodes sent to you automatically weekly. Also, we have really enjoyed your feedback. It's so meaningful for us when we get to read the nice comments that you guys put. So keep doing that. If you don't know how to do it, here's what you got to do. You search for To The Point Home Services on Apple Podcasts. You click on our profile, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and hit write a review, and be honest and share your story and how the podcast has impacted you and your business. Thanks again from the bottom of our hearts at To The Point Home Services Podcast. We appreciate you.